And the Turks on the plateau who would exchange their products, hides, meat, and the like, for the products of the Christian agriculturalists. And even along the imperial frontiers in the areas restored by Alexis I, John II, you find that the Turcomans very often cross those imperial frontiers, going up to the higher summer pastures with their animals. And there's all sorts of local arrangements where the animals are driven over certain fields, where the manure is obviously going to fertilize the crops. The Byzantine Christians, who are subjects of the emperor, are selling products to the Turks. The Turks are selling products to the Christians. So that the notion of a continual battle going on Asia Minor really has to be modified. And in some ways, the Turcomans were very successfully integrated into the economy of Asia Minor in the 12th century. And these Turcomans could be taxed. They could be regulated to some extent. So that's an important point to keep in mind. Likewise, the Crusaders can be seen as both a stimulus as well as a destructive agent in the Byzantine economy. I mentioned in an earlier lecture that in 1096, 1097, at least 100,000 crusaders and pilgrims crossed during the First Crusade. We suspect that the same number crossed in the Second Crusade, and perhaps 50,000 followed the army of Frederick Barbarossa in the Third Crusade, which we'll discuss later in this series. The fact that the Byzantines could feed, equip, clothe, house these enormous armies and pilgrims is a testimony to the Byzantine economy. It did put great strain on it. On the other hand, the Byzantines responded. All of these crusaders spent large sums of monies in Byzantine markets. Odo of Deuil, the chaplain of Louis VII, who ranted and raved about all the abuses of the Byzantines, particularly points out the fact that crusaders had to exchange their silver coin for the billin, that is the low-grade silver coins, the fiduciary coins of the Byzantine Empire, the so-called trachea aspera, at unfavorable rates. But each crusade brought large sums of money into the Byzantine economy. And then many Western European knights and pilgrims settled in Byzantine cities. We see that at Nicaea in the First Crusade. We see others signing on with service with Manuel I. You have the arrival of the Italian merchants who settle under various arrangements in Constantinople. So in this sense, the Byzantine economy prospers and succeeds in many ways in the arrival of the Crusaders. And this compensates for some of the costs involved in maintaining those Crusades. So when you look at the picture of Crusaders and Turcomen, it's rather mixed. And it's not necessary to argue that the whole Byzantine economic system was in general decline, and that accounts for the rapid demise after 1180. Some of the fiscal monetary policies pursued by the Achaemenid emperors definitely contributed to an economic revival, a very impressive economic revival. And there is a school of Byzantine economic historians right now who would argue that the Byzantine economy was always expanding from 900 to 1300 or 1200. There was a constant expansion and that the political and military changes of the 12th century have been greatly exaggerated. And you can take this position a bit far, but nonetheless, that argument can be legitimately made now. In one instance, for instance, the emperors were extremely important. Not only did Alexis I impose order on what was now his Byzantine state, he also carried out important fiscal and monetary reforms. And he reformed the imperial currency that had been ruined in the last 50 years, a currency that in its structure went back to the Emperor Constantine. He introduced a new gold coin, the Hyperperion, struck at 22.5 carats fine. There's 24 carats to a gold piece. This is about 87-88% pure gold. The rest is silver. That coin quickly established itself as the trade coin in the Eastern Mediterranean. And gold coins issued by Achaemenid emperors in the 12th century were continually used through the 12th century and well into the 13th century as the leading trade coin in Mediterranean markets. And we have reports as late as almost 1300 of Byzantine gold coins issued back in the 11th century being used to exchange and settle debts in Italy and parts of the Levant because the coin was so well recognized. These coins were exchanged against a very clever set of fractions, fiduciary coins, that is, coins based on the trust in the government, that you could exchange these low-value pieces ultimately against the gold coins. They were taken in tax collection. They were then spent by the imperial government and sent into markets. And so Alexis very successfully rebuilt the imperial currency along a new system of denominations based on a series of alloys. And that's an important point to stress because it gave a certain stability in Byzantine markets that was extremely important because the Byzantine economy used coins on a daily basis, down to very simple fractions for small purchases all the way up to the high-value coins that would be used in international trade or collected in tax obligation.